The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 10, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Case of the Speckled Band. Episode 2, The Case of the Double Zero. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now let's look in on our genial friend and good host, Dr. Watson. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Punctual to the minute, as usual.
Never keep a doctor waiting, I always say. Particularly Dr. Watson.
Draw up a chair, my boy.
Thank you.
That's it.
All ready to tell us the Sherlock Holmes adventure of the Speckled Band, Doctor?
Yes, I'm all ready, Mr. Bartell.
Say, Doctor, just what does a speckled band mean?
You wait until I've told you the story, young fellow, my lad. You'll find out for yourself.
Sorry. The floor is all yours, Doctor.
The adventure of the Speckled Band began on a rainy April morning in 1883. An urgent call from one of my patients had kept me up most of the night before, and in consequence, I came down to my breakfast rather later than usual to find that Holmes had already left our house some hours earlier. As I sat there reading the morning paper and consuming my two lightly boiled eggs, there was a knock at the door. It opened to disclose a typical example of the British working man, a bag of tools in one hand and a grimy cap in the other, as he spoke to me from the doorway.
You sent for me, Mr. Holmes?
I'm not, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, beg your pardon, Governor. But I've come to mend the gas bracket over the mantelpiece.
Oh? What's wrong with it?
I've got a leak in it.
Oh, leak? Well, get along with your work.
Yes, sir. Hope I won't be disturbing you, sir.
No, that's all right, my man. Don't mind me.
Oh, dear. Very untidy man, Mr. Holmes, sir.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you can't help noticing the mess this room's in. I've heard say he was as tidy as any when he started. But he learned bad habits from a bloke what lived with him. Dr. Watson, I think his name is.
You impertinent fellow. How dare you talk to me like that? I've got a good... where does he go to? Here. You come out of there. That's Mr. Holmes's room.
Don't be angry with me, Watson. What? Just slipping out of these grimy rags into a dressing gown.
Good gracious me. So was you, Holmes. Well, upon my soul, I'd never recognized you, but why the disguise?
A case, my dear Watson, a case. One of those small problems which a trusting public occasionally confides to my investigation. To the British workman, old chap, all doors are open. His costume is unostentatious and his habits are sociable. Tool bag is an excellent passport and a tawny moustache will secure the cooperation of maids.
But what's the case, Holmes?
Well, modest little drama of life in the kitchen, one of those seemingly inconsequential affairs, and yet, Watson, the honor of a duchess is at stake.
Duchess?
A mad world, my masters, a mad world. Now I feel a little more comfortable. Let's return to the sitting room, shall we? A strong cup of tea would be just acceptable.
Oh, I wish you'd tell me about the duchess and life in the kitchen, Holmes.
Some other time, old fellow, some other time. At the moment, suppose you tell me what you know about Miss Helen Stoner. I received a letter from her this morning in which she informed me that she would be calling here at 11, and also that she was a friend of yours.
Helen Turner? Oh, yes. A charming girl indeed.
Pour me a cup of tea, Watson, and tell me about her.
Well, I befriended her at the time of the tragic death of her sister 2 years ago. I told you about the case, don't you remember? The sudden death of Violet Stoner at an old house in Stoke Moran?
Oh, yes. It all comes back to me now. There was an inquest, wasn't there, with a string of stupid, ineffective witnesses.
I was one of them.
Oh, I'm sorry, old fellow. Then you were the exception, of course. Wait a minute. Let me see. I docketed the evidence on the case. Where is it? My scrapbook. Here we are. Let me see. Yes, S. S. Salisbury Hatchet Murder, Lordson Simon. Here we are. Stoke Moran. Yes, I remember the affair well now. The villain of the piece was Dr. Grimsby Roylott, wasn't he?
Yes, a dreadful fellow. He's the stepfather of the two girls. Violet, the one that died so mysteriously. Helen, the one who's coming here to see you.
Dr. Roylott has a pretty record. 55 years of age, killed his kit Magar in India, once in an insane asylum, married money, wife died. Distinguished surgeon. Well, Watson. I wonder what the distinguished surgeon has been up to now.
Oh, some deviltry, I fear.
Why do you say that?
You remember that Miss Violet Stoner's death followed close upon the announcement of her engagement.
Yes.
Well, I met Miss Helen Stoner on the streets a few weeks ago. She told me that she'd just become engaged to a young fellow in the army who was leaving for the Far East. She was very upset at the thought of being alone with her stepfather at Stoke Moran.
Oh, naturally it was. Dr. Roylott stands to lose a considerable sum of money in the event of his stepdaughter's marriage.
Yes, they both had a trust fund which he administered only as long as the girls were unmarried. That fact was brought out at the coroner's inquest 2 years ago. But if Roylott did poison the other stepdaughter, and I'm pretty convinced that he did, it seems unlikely that he'd try it again. Two sudden deaths in the same household could hardly pass the coroner.
Oh, no, my dear Watson. You're making the mistake of putting your normal brain into Roylott's abnormal being.
Oh, that must be Miss Stoner now.
Yes, let me see. It's precisely 11 o'clock. Well, let's see what we can do for her.
Well, I hope you can help her, Holmes. She's an extremely nice girl.
Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
There's a Miss Helen Stoner to see you, sir. She says she has an appointment.
Show her in, please, Mrs. Hudson.
Aye, sir. Come in, my dear.
Thank you.
Miss Stoner, I'm so glad to see you again.
How do you do, Dr. Watson? And this must be your friend.
Yes, Miss Stoner, I'm Sherlock Holmes. Sit down by the fire, won't you?
Yes, yes, please do, my dear. Hello, you're trembling with cold.
It's not cold that makes me shiver. Tell me, Mr. Holmes, has my stepfather, Dr. Grimsby Roylott, been here?
No, he hasn't.
He saw me in the street. I dashed by him in a hansom cab, but he saw me. Our eyes met and he waved me to stop, but I came here as fast as I could.
A very sensible move. Dr. Watson has already given me several hints as to your present problem, as well as having refreshed my memory as to the circumstances of your sister's death.
My problem is a simple enough one, Mr. Holmes. I'm waiting to be murdered.
No, my dear
please
girl.
Be a trifle more explicit, Miss Stoner.
Very well, Mr. Holmes. My fiancé is leaving for the Far East today. When he leaves, I shall be alone with my stepfather at Stoke Moran. He plans to murder me just as he murdered my sister.
What makes you say that, Miss Stoner?
Many strange things have happened recently. For instance, he's just moved me into the bedroom in which my sister died.
Well, what reason did he give for changing your room?
That my old one needed repainting. It didn't need it, but Dr. Roylott did need to move me into that horrible room. And other things have happened. I've heard the music again.
Music? What music?
My sister first heard it a few days before she died. I heard it myself on that dreadful night she breathed her last. Oh, Mr. Holmes, I'm terrified.
Don't worry, my dear. Please don't worry anymore. You have friends to help you now. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
No, of course not.
Now, it's music. Does it seem to come from inside the house or outside?
Well, it's hard to say. It sounds so faint.
What's it like?
A sort of soft droning sound.
Like a flute or a pipe?
Yes, it reminds me of native music I heard during my childhood in India.
India, eh? Oh.
There's one other thing that puzzles me, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, what's that?
My sister's dying words. As she lay in my arms, she gasped out two words.
Oh, what were they?
Band and speckled. You remember that evidence from the inquest, don't you, Dr. Watson?
Yes, I do. I couldn't make head or tail of it. So?
Band, speckled, Indian music. Miss Stoner, do you sleep with your door and windows fastened?
Yes, Mr. Holmes, but so did poor Violet. It didn't save her, though.
What did you gather from your sister's dying allusion to the band, the speckled band?
Well, sometimes I thought it was merely the wild talk of delirium, and sometimes that it referred to a band of people.
Oh, yes.
I remember that there were some gypsies encamped quite near us at the time of Violet's death.
Gypsies, eh?
Yes, and it occurred to me that the spotted, gaily colored kerchiefs, which so many of them wear over their heads, might have suggested the unusual adjective which my sister used.
Miss Stoner, how long is it since you heard this strange music that you've told us about?
I heard it last night.
And your fiancé leaves today, you say?
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Well, Miss Stoner, I shall do everything I can to help you. If we were to come to Stoke Moran today, would it be possible to see over your rooms without the knowledge of your stepfather?
Why, I think so. He told me this morning that he intended to take a late train home tonight.
Ah, that's splendid. Watson, out with the timetable, old fellow, and look up the trains to Stoke Moran.
Right, you are, Holmes.
That's my stepfather. I know it is. Oh, yes. Yes, there he is on the doorstep. Oh, Mr. Holmes, he's followed me. Oh, what shall I do if he finds me here?
Don't worry, Miss Stoner. Please don't worry. There's a private exit through that room there. Watson, show her the way, will you?
Come along with me, my dear young lady.
And you will come down today, Mr. Holmes?
Certainly, my dear Miss Stoner. I'll telegraph you the entire time of our arrival. Goodbye and courage, my dear.
Goodbye, Mr. Holmes, and thank you.
Come along, Miss Stoner, quickly.
Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
It's a gentleman, sir. I told him you wouldn't see anyone without an appointment, but he...
Out of the way, woman!
You push me like that. I'm sorry, Mr. Holmes.
That's all right, Mrs. Hudson. You can leave us.
What kind of gentleman does he call himself, pushing an old lady?
So you're Sherlock Holmes.
You have the advantage of me, sir. Your name is...
My name, sir, is Roylott. Dr. Grimsby Roylott of Stoke Moran.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. A charming place, I hear, and obviously good for the lungs.
You won't trifle with me if you know what's good for you.
Watson, there you are. And how was the experiment?
Very successful, Holmes. Good day to you, Dr. Roylott. I haven't seen you since I gave evidence at your stepdaughter's inquest.
Yes, yes, I remember you, Dr. Watson. Now listen to me, you two. My stepdaughter's been here. I placed her. What's she been saying to you?
It's a little cold for this time of the year, isn't it?
You answer me!
I hear that the crocuses promise well.
You dare to try and put me off, do you? I know you, you scoundrel. You're Holmes the meddler.
Am I?
Holmes the busybody.
I believe that a man should occupy his time.
Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
When you go out, close the door, won't you? There's a draft.
I'll go when I've had my say. Keep your nose out of my affairs, you hear?
Oh, yes, my hearing is excellent, thank you, and your diction and delivery most forceful. But time flies, my dear doctor, time flies, and life has its duties as well as its pleasures. Goodbye.
Insolent rascal! Here, see this poker?
Oh, the fire doesn't need poking, thank you, doctor. But I should be obliged if you'd put some more coal on for me.
You laugh at me. You don't know my strength. Look! There! Your poker's bent double. That's what I'll do to both of you. If you don't keep out of my affairs.
I had a presentiment that he'd slam the door.
Phew. He's an ugly customer, eh, Holmes?
Literally as well as figuratively. Watson, I'd be much obliged if you'd get your revolver. It may prove to be an excellent argument with a gentleman who twists iron pokers into knots.
The fellow's amazingly strong. Just look at it.
I don't want to appear flamboyant, but, there we are.
Great Scott, Holmes, you straightened the poker out again.
Yes, it was utterly useless in its former shape. And now what's on the timetable? We'll catch the next fast train to Stoke Moran.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, I'm so relieved that you've come. But don't you think my stepfather might have followed you down here?
Let's take that chance, Miss Stoner. A few hours' delay might mean the difference between our life and death. It was imperative that we examine this bedroom of yours before Dr. Roylott returns.
Anyway, my dear, you mustn't worry anymore. We're here in your house, and we're going to take good care of you, no matter what harm befalls you. Oh,
thank you, Dr. Watson.
So this is the room in which your sister died, is it? It's much as I pictured it.
And Dr. Roylott's room adjoins this one, you say, Miss Stoner?
Yes, Doctor, on that side. The room which adjoins it on the other side is my regular bedroom.
The one that's being so conveniently painted, eh?
Yes.
Well, let's examine this room. No trap doors or sliding panels, I suppose.
It sounds solid enough, Holmes.
Yes, I think it is. Hello, what's this? Are you aware that this bed is clamped to the floor, Miss Stoner?
Why, no, no, Mr. Holmes, I didn't know that.
What an extraordinary thing.
Was the bed in your other room anchored also?
Why, no, I don't think it was.
Very illuminating. And this bell pull hanging against the wall above your bed.
Oh, that, it doesn't work. It
doesn't work, but if you want to ring.
There's another one on the other wall, over there.
Now, why this one?
Well, I don't know. My stepfather made a number of changes after we came here.
Yes, quite a burst of activity, apparently. And it took some strange shapes.
Why are you standing on the bed, Holmes?
I'm curious, my dear fellow. Uh-huh. It may interest you to know that this bell rope is fastened to a brass hook. There's no wire attachment. It's a dummy.
A dummy? But why?
There's a small screen above it. It's a ventilator, I suppose.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Yes. A ventilator leading into your stepfather's room. Curious. I notice there's no means of opening the ventilator on this side. It can only be operated from your stepfather's room next door. I wonder if you'd mind taking us in there.
Of course, Mr. Holmes. Follow me.
What do you make of it, Holmes?
There's devil's work afoot, old chap.
Here we are, Mr. Holmes.
It's much the same as the other room. A bit bigger, perhaps.
That large safe against the wall seems to be an unusual piece of bedroom furniture. What is it, Miss Stoner?
My stepfather's business papers.
Oh, yes.
You've seen inside it, then?
Only once, some years ago. I remember that it was full of documents.
What's this saucer of milk doing on top of it? Does Dr. Roylott keep a cat?
No, but he does have a cheetah and a baboon as pets. He brought them with him from India.
Well, Holmes, a cheetah is just a big cat.
True, but I doubt if a saucer of milk would go very far in satisfying the appetite of a cheetah. Well, I think I've seen enough. This matter is too serious for hesitation. Your life may depend upon your following of my instructions, Miss Homer.
I'll do anything you say, Mr. Holmes, anything.
Is that village inn I see through the trees from this window?
Yes, the Queen's Arms.
Your bedroom windows would be visible from there.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Very well, then. Watson and I will go there now and obtain accommodations. When your stepfather returns, you must confine yourself to your room on the pretense of a headache. You follow me?
Perfectly.
When Dr. Roylott returns for the night, you must open your bedroom window and put your lamp on the sill as a signal to us at the inn. Then withdraw quietly to your usual bedroom, the one that's being painted. I'm sure that you could manage that for one night.
Of course. But what will you do?
When we get your signal, Dr. Watson and I will come here and spend the night in your dead sister's room. We are going to solve this mystery of the dummy bell rope and the unusual ventilator and the strange music in the night.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Doctor, it's a rattling good story so far. What happened next? You went to the local inn, I guess, and waited for that lantern to appear in the bedroom window at Dr. Roylott's house?
That's right, Mr. Bartell. We had an early dinner at the Queen's Arms and then retired to our upstairs bedroom and sat there side by side, puffing away at our pipes, our eyes straining through the darkness for that telltale lantern to give us the signal that there was dangerous work ahead for us. As we sat there discussing the various aspects of the case, I remember that Holmes was very concerned about my own safety.
Now, Watson, I really have some scruples about taking you with me tonight. This is an infernally dangerous business.
Now, what about that poor girl alone in the house with that fiend, Roylott?
I can handle the case by myself, old chap.
I'm coming with you, Holmes. You speak of danger. You've evidently seen more in those rooms than was visible to
me. No, but possibly I've deduced a little more, and I imagine you saw all that I did.
Well, I saw nothing remarkable except the bell rope, and what purpose that could answer, I confess, is more than I can imagine.
You saw the ventilator, too.
Yes, but I don't think it's such an unusual thing to have an opening between two rooms. It's so small that a mouse could hardly pass through it.
True, but at least you will admit there was a curious sequence of coincidences. A ventilator is constructed, a bell cord is hung from it, a lady sleeps in a bed directly below the ventilator, a bed that is anchored to the floor. The lady dies.
Well, I begin to see what you're driving at, Holmes. Look, 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 look. There's the lantern in Miss Turner's window.
It's our signal, all right. Come on, Watson. Our night's vigil begins. Foul night for foul business, Watson. Come on, through these laurel bushes. It's only another 50 yards to the house.
Yes, the lantern's still burning away in the bedroom window.
Yes, all the other lights are out.
Including the one in Dr. Roylott's room. He must have gone to sleep.
To bed, possibly, Watson, but not, I think, to sleep.
Great heavens, Holmes. Look at that frightful creature leaping about in the moonlight. It looks like some hideous child.
That's Dr. Roylott's pet baboon.
But it looks positively human.
Yes, probably a great deal more so than its master. They're directly below the window now. This ivy provides a most convenient ladder. I'll go up first.
Be careful, Holmes, careful. Wait a minute. I hope the thing's strong enough to hold us both. He looked pretty stupid on our backs in the mud. Get a hand with you, Holmes. I can't quite get my leg up over this window ledge. Oh, thanks, old boy. Oh, say, phew.
Now to close the window shutters.
This room looks exactly like the same as it did this afternoon.
These sounds would be fatal to our plans. Keep the lamp covered so that if the ventilator is open from Dr. Roylott's room, no light will show from in there. That's it.
Why are you carrying that stick, Holmes?
I'm prepared for a visitor that I expect before the night is over. A visitor who will herald his entrance with faint music from an Indian pipe.
You mean the music is a signal?
Exactly, old fellow. The signal to an accomplice who can enter a room with locked doors. An accomplice who kills and leaves no trace.
You mean that...
Shh! No more talking, Watson. I'll sit on the edge of the bed here. You sit on that chair. Have your revolver ready in case you should need it.
Right you are.
Have the lantern ready, too. When I shout now, turn the light full on the top of the bell rope. You understand?
Yes, perfectly.
Good. Now we must wait. Perhaps for some time. But don't go to sleep, Watson. Don't go to sleep. Your very life may depend on it. Messenger of death. Have your lantern ready, Watson.
Now, Watson, now! Great heavens, it's a snake slithering down the bell rope. You can't get it with that stick, Holmes. Out of the way. Let me get a shot at it.
I'm going to drive it back the way it came. Get out.
There it goes. Back through the ventilator. Oh. What a fiendish plan.
I think the devil has turned on its master. Come on, Watson, into Dr. Roylott's room. Dr. Roylott! Dr. Roylott! Doctor!
Good Lord, Holmes. Look at him sprawled on the bed. Look at his eyes.
Yes. And see what is coiled around his forehead.
It's the snake.
Yes, the band. The speckled band.
He's dead, Holmes.
Yes, he's been bitten by the deadliest snake in the world. The Indian swamp adder. Deadly fangs produce death within 10 seconds. Well, Watson, violence does in truth recoil upon the violent. And the schemer falls into the pit which he digs for another.
What should we do now, Holmes?
We must remove the macabre headgear from the dead doctor and return the snake to its den. Then I suggest that we tell Miss Stoner that there's no more danger under this roof. After that, we can turn the matter over to the local police. Our work is done.
Holmes, Dr. Watson, I can't tell you how grateful I am that you brought me back into Baker Street.
My dear Stoner, it would have been inhuman to leave you in that house of horror and death. We have a spare bedroom, and Mrs. Hudson is a motherly and understanding woman, and I can assure you that Dr. Watson and I will be delighted to have you stay with us here until you've decided on your future plans.
Yes, of course we will, my dear. As a matter of fact, it would be rather refreshing to have a touch of youth about the place.
You're both so kind. Mr. Holmes, I think it's wonderful how you foiled my stepfather's devilish plans.
Yes, wasn't it a remarkable example of logical deduction?
No, it wasn't, old fellow. At first, your mention of the gypsies, Miss Stoner, and the use of the word ban put me on an entirely wrong scent. However, when we examined the fatal room, I drew the obvious conclusion.
You mean the dummy bell rope, the ventilator, and the immovable bed?
Yes, old fellow. It instantly gave rise to the suspicion that the rope was there as a bridge for something coming through the ventilator and traveling to the bed. I once thought of a snake. When I saw the saucer of milk on top of the safe, my suspicions crystallized into certainties.
Oh, it was a fiendish plot.
Yes, and an extremely clever one, too.
Exactly.
My stepfather must have trained the snake to return to him when he played the music.
Yes, he put it through the ventilator with the certainty that it would crawl down the rope and land on the bed. It might or might not bite the occupant. Perhaps she might escape every night for a week, but sooner or later she must fall a victim.
Thank heaven I came to you, Mr. Holmes.
Amen to that,
Miss Stoner. You know, Holmes, if you hadn't lashed at the snake with your stick, I bet it wouldn't have turned back on its master.
True, old chap. In that way, I am no doubt indirectly responsible for Dr. Grimsby Roylott's death. But I can't say it's a fact that's likely to weigh too heavily on my conscience.
Doctor, that was quite a fascinating story.
You know something? I'm not exactly a coward, but no kidding. My toes really curl when I get mixed up with snakes.
Oh, you're not alone in that respect, Mr. Bartell. I must admit that I like to have a revolver and at least 20 feet between me and any snake that wants to cross my path.
Well, if you want a revolver in 20 feet, I'll take a cannon in 20 miles. Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is an adaptation of the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Speckled Band. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invites you to spend the next half hour listening to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now let's look in on our good friend and host, Dr. Watson.
Come in, come in, come in. Ah, there you are, Mr. Bartell.
Evening, Doctor.
Just in time to join me in a cup of coffee. Draw up your chair, young fellow, my lad.
Thank you.
That's it.
Well, Doctor, you told us last week that tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure takes us to the south of France.
That's right, Mr. Bartell. The south of France in the year 1900. A beautiful playground bordered by the bluest of blue seas and populated with an extraordinary cross-section of cosmopolitan Europe. Rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief. All of them attracted by that Riviera paradise. All of them drawn by the magical spell of a small white ball spinning round the rim of a roulette wheel.
Now, don't tell me that you and the great Sherlock Holmes were there on a gambling spree.
We were not, Mr. Bartell. At the time my story begins, we had just concluded an extremely delicate mission. A mission, I may say, that concerned the safety and good name of a very prominent member of the royal family.
Say, Doctor, you don't mean...
One story at a time, Mr. Bartell. In any event, my boy, I'm afraid that's a case about which my lips are sealed for all time. But to return to tonight's adventure, one June evening, I persuaded Holmes to accompany me to the gambling casino at Fréjus, not far from Cannes, where we were staying. It wasn't quite as fashionable as the casino at Monte Carlo, but as I intended to do a little modest gambling myself, it seemed an establishment more suited to my means. As we stood there at the green baize-covered tables, the chatter of voices and the melodic chanting of the croupiers as they called the results of each spin of the wheel formed a background to a quiet conversation that Holmes and I were having.
Lost again, Watson.
Oh, confounded. That number 10 must come up soon.
Oh, why not cut your losses, old fellow, and come for a stroll with me on the waterfront?
Well, just a big wig. A couple more bets, Holmes. I have a feeling that 10 is bound to come up in a minute.
Watson, I believe the blood of a gambler courses through your veins.
Oh, there's no harm in taking a little flutter once in a while. Why don't you risk a few francs, Holmes?
No, thank you, my dear chap. The law of averages convinces me that my money is safer in my pocket. In any case, I'm a little dubious as to the integrity of this particular casino.
Huh? What makes you say that?
Well, you will observe that this roulette wheel has a double zero. Most continental wheels have only a single one. It would indicate that this house is extremely concerned with its percentage.
Mesdames et messieurs, faites vos jeux.
Oh, just two more turns of the wheel, Holmes, and I'll take that walk with you.
Oh, you miss the gear spieling. Why do you not go from the other side of the table? Why must you always stand next to me?
Hello. The trouble up there?
I've placed my bet, so let's go and see.
I ask you, sir, why do you play here beside me?
I'm afraid I don't see any reason why I can't play wherever I...
Swish, you've broken my luck. Ever since you come to the table, I've done nothing but lose. Please, to move away.
I'll move away yourself if you don't like my company.
Heinrich, why do you not stop now? You've already lost more than we can afford.
One more throw, Elsa. I can win it all back if only this young man will move away.
Why should my husband move? He's had a bad run of luck, too.
We are never plus.
Rouge, Imperiement.
Ah, you've lost again, Watson.
Heinrich, you must stop now.
I must stop inside because I've lost everything. I hope you're satisfied, Mr. American. You've broken my luck and ruined. I hope that you and your friend will be ruined too.
Heinrich! Heinrich, wait for me!
I never heard such rubbish in my life. Were you listening to him, sir?
I heard his last few remarks, Mr.
Gilbert. Roger Gilbert. And this is my wife, Helen.
How do you do? My name is Holmes, and this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
How do you do? Didn't you think his remarks were a little out of place, Doctor?
Yeah, I certainly did, Mrs. Gilbert. I don't see how I can possibly blame your husband for his run of bad luck.
I didn't like the look on his face as he left the table, though. Have you any idea who he is?
His name is Schneeman. He's staying at the same hotel as we are. I've never spoken to him, but I've heard of being paged there.
Well, you shouldn't gamble unless you can afford to lose.
Well, I'm losing, darling, and I can't afford it.
Oh, but I can let you have more money. You know that.
Oh, no, Helen. I may have married an heiress, but I'm not going to use her fortune to gamble with.
Oh.
I'll lose my own money, and then I'll quit.
Mesdames et messieurs, take for you.
Your last bet, Watson?
Yes, Holmes. This time I know that number 10 is going to come up. It's got to.
I've lost again, darn it. Helen, this is my bad night.
Why don't you stop now, dear?
Holmes, I've made 350 francs.
On this throw of the wheel, old fellow, but as you've lost some 500 francs doing it, I can't say that you're afraid to stagger me.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, I can see that you're no gambler.
I'm afraid not, Mrs. Gilbert.
I wouldn't say that, Holmes. You may not like roulette. You've taken a good many chances in your life with long odds against you, too.
Well, nevertheless, old chap, in the sense Mrs. Gilbert means it, I'm not a gambler.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Say, where's the commotion over there?
Oh, that German woman with a crowd forming around
him. Yes, yes, the wife of that man that said I ruined him.
Attention! Attention! Est-ce qu'il y a un docteur dans la salle?
There must be trouble. He's asking for a doctor.
A doctor? Come along, then.
Will you excuse me, please? Thank you. Excuse me, madame. Mon ami, a docteur.
Monsieur! Cette dame a besoin d'un docteur.
What happened, madame?
It is my husband.
Is he ill?
I just found him lying out in the garden. Please come with me at once, gentlemen.
Of course we will, madam.
What seems to be the matter with him?
Herr Doctor, I think he is dead. He's lying by that tree, Doctor. Please see if you can help him.
Somebody else seems to be on the scene before us. Who are you, sir?
I am Monsieur Chabray, director of the casino. Do any of you know this poor man?
I am his wife. Is he dead?
I am afraid so, madame.
Let me look at him. I'm a doctor.
Was your husband gambling in the casino tonight, madame?
Yeah, he was. Poor Heinrich. He lost everything that we have.
I'm afraid he is dead, madam. Shot through the heart.
Oh, to leap a cut.
Suicide, Watson?
Yeah, looks like it.
Hmm. Yes. Powder burned on the shirt front, revolver clutched in the right hand, fingers in a natural position. The angle of the wound settles it. Obviously, self-inflicted.
I missed you as you slipped out of the casino. What's wrong with him?
I'm afraid he's dead, Mr. Gilbert.
Yes, he committed suicide. I hope, young man, that you are satisfied. All night you brought him bad luck. He asked you to move away from him to change his luck, but no, you could not do it.
Oh, Frau Schneeman, I'm terribly sorry, but I really don't see how you can blame me.
I do blame you, and I also blame you, Monsieur Chevry.
Me? But what have I done, madame?
Why do you let a man lose all his money at your tables? Is life so cheap to you, or money so important that you cannot close the tables to someone before he's ruined?
Madame, I am all sympathy for you in your tragic loss, but the casino cannot be held responsible. If your husband could not afford to gamble, then he should not come here. How are we to know the financial limitations of our customers?
You said your husband lost everything you had tonight, madam.
Yeah, everything.
Then how do you account for this sheaf of banknotes in his breast pocket?
Good Lord, must be several thousand francs, sir.
Then he wasn't ruined.
And his suicide, therefore, cannot be blamed on his losses at my casino, madame.
How do you account for this money, Frau Schneeman?
Well, I do not understand. Heinrich kept nothing from me. I know that he had not so much money on him when he started tonight. Well, why do you all look at me like that? Is it that you think? You think...
Quick, why did she faint it?
I've got her.
Let's get her to her room.
You can take her to my suite in the casino.
No, let's take her to the hotel. My wife will look after her. Poor woman, she's had a dreadful shock. She can probably do with another woman's company.
It's very considerate of you, Mr. Gilbert. Where are you staying?
At the Hotel Crillon. It's quite near here.
I'll get a cabin. While I'm doing that, Watson, see if you can revive her, will you? Then we'll take her to the Hotel Crillon. very kind of you, Mrs. Gilbert, to let us bring the poor lady into your suite.
Well, it's the least I can do, in spite of what she said about Roger bringing her husband bad luck.
I'm sure she'll need your help when she wakes up, Helen.
Yes, I think you'll find that she'll sleep for some hours. I gave her a strong sedative.
Well, we were just about to have a drink, gentlemen. Do you care to join us?
Oh, thank you, sir.
Well, that'd be very nice, Mr. Gilbert.
Roger was just telling me that quite a large sum of money was found on Herr Shaveman's body, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Mrs. Gilbert. Several thousand francs.
That's very puzzling, Holmes. Why should a man commit suicide with so much money on him?
I think the answer is obvious. He didn't.
What on earth do you mean?
Well, the money was placed there after he had shot himself. The bank notes were in his breast pocket, if you remember. Not the usual place to carry money. Though it is the easiest pocket for someone to insert it without disturbing the body.
But why on earth should someone place money on him after his suicide?
Prevent the casino from getting a bad name. I've heard of it being done on several similar occasions. Gives the impression that the unfortunate victim had other motives than gambling losses to account for his suicide.
Great Scott, you mean that one of the casino employees found the body lying there and slipped the money in his breast pocket before we arrived on the scene?
As you know, my dear Watson, I'm not a gambling man, but I'll lay you 100 to 1. That is what happened.
Well, that's a new one. Well, here are your drinks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Say, Helen, Mr. Holmes has given me a brainwave.
Another one? What is it this time, Roger?
Now, I've been losing very heavily tonight.
Roger, I've told you. If you need money, I'll be only...
But I don't. I've got a scheme for making some. Oh. I'm going to gamble again tonight after dinner. If I lose, here's what I'll do. I'll stain my shirt front with red ink, walk out in the grounds, fire a shot, and lie down as though I'm dead. I'll wait for someone to come along and stuff my pockets full of banknotes.
Not a bad idea, Mr. Gilbert.
I think it's a darn good one. What do you say, Mr. Holmes?
It's a whimsical one, at any rate. Who knows? You might even be successful.
Roger, you're not really going to do it, are you?
Sure. Perhaps I'll get some of my losses back that way. Well, let's drink to it, gentlemen. At least I may have hit upon an idea of making money.
Watson, you'll have to work hard at your practice when you get back to England. Your infallible system appears to be extremely fallible.
And yet the fellow who told me about it said it couldn't miss. It's just a matter of doubling the stakes each time you lose,
oh,
and then...
Oh, my dear fellow, I've been studying your system. But I can tell you a really infallible way of making money at roulette.
You can? What is it?
Well, own the gambling house and operate the tables yourself. The odds would be all in your favor.
Oh, what a brilliant suggestion. Own the gambling house and operate the tables.
Not gambling for tonight, Watson? It's nearly 11 o'clock.
No, I think so. Let's take a stroll around the other table, shall we?
By the way, old fellow, the young American, Mr. Gilbert, was losing heavily again tonight.
He was? I wonder if he'll try that trick that he threatened, the one with the red ink and the shot in the night.
I shouldn't be at all surprised. As a matter of interest, I saw him leave the tables about half an hour ago.
Here comes his wife, on the arm of Monsieur Chevrier, the director of the casino.
Good
evening, Mrs. Gilbert. Monsieur?
Bonsoir, monsieur.
Hello, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Watson. Monsieur Chevrier is giving me a personally conducted tour of the casino. It's quite fascinating.
And it is quite fascinating for me to have so beautiful a woman on my arm, mademoiselle. I know that I am the envy of all the men in the room.
Oh, stop flattering me so much. I'm not used to it.
Mrs. Gilbert, how is Frau Schneemann?
She seems much better. She wakened an hour ago and insisted on going back to her own room. I wanted her to spend the night with us in our suite, but she wouldn't hear of it.
I think I should drop in and see her before I go to bed.
Oh, you have finished the gambling for tonight, perhaps, Doctor?
No, perhaps about it, Monsieur Chevrier. I've had a bad run at the tables.
Oh, I am so sorry.
Has anyone seen Roger?
He left the tables about half an hour ago, Mrs. Gilbert.
After doing as I did and losing quite heavily.
So he lost again, did he? I wonder if he'll try that new system he was talking about.
We were just discussing that possibility ourselves, Mrs. Gilbert.
Mrs. Gilbert! Mrs. Gilbert!
Frau Schneemann, you shouldn't have left your hotel, you know.
It is too late to worry for me, Herr Doctor. It is for Mrs. Gilbert now that you should worry.
What do you mean, madam?
Well, I went back just now to where poor Heinrich died. And there, lying in the grass, I saw another body. I was too shocked to go too close. But I am quite sure that I recognize your husband, Mrs. Gilbert. Oh, Dr. Watson, she's ruined Roger's trick.
And he'll have taken fright and bolted by the time we get there.
Watson, maybe let's go at once and find out, shall we?
He hasn't gone. He's still lying there.
It's a most convincing spectacle. That red ink really does look like blood.
Yes. And blood sometimes looks like red ink. Mr. Gilbert!
Roger, get up. The joke's spoiled. Roger! Get up!
I'm afraid that's impossible, Mrs. Gilbert. He's dead.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Doctor, so the young American's joke turned out to be another tragedy.
Yes, Mr. Bartell, the poor fellow was lying there dead with a bullet wound in the heart and a great splash of blood staining the whiteness of his shirt front.
What happened next?
Monsieur Chevre, director of the casino, took the distraught widow away from the scene while Holmes and I examined the body closely. Within a few minutes, we were joined by Inspector Ganivet of the French police. As we stood there in the moonlight, the sounds of music could be heard from the casino. It was hard to believe that two men had died in that lovely garden since the moon had risen.
Monsieur Holmes, you and Dr. Watson have concluded your examination.
Yes, Inspector Ganivet.
You favor me with your observations. You say that you are certain that this is not another suicide?
I'm sure of it, Inspector. Look at the wound. The bullet entered the body at a direct right angle, whereas a self-inflicted shot is always fired obliquely.
Yes, that is so. Then you suggest that this man was shot from above as he lay on the ground pretending to be dead.
I'm convinced of it.
Why, Monsieur Holmes?
Well, for two reasons. Though it's impossible to be sure without a laboratory test, I'm certain that beneath those bloodstains are stains of red ink. Look for yourself, Inspector.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed it does look like it. What is your other reason for being certain that this man was shot as he lay here pretending dead?
I'll show him the banknotes, Watson.
Here you are, Inspector. We found them stuffed in his breast pocket.
So, banknotes with a bullet hole through the middle of them. Very illuminating. Tell me, gentlemen, how many people knew of this this little plot you have told me about, this plan of the dead man's to pretend to be shot?
Just three people, Inspector. Dr. Watson, myself, and Mrs. Gilbert.
Alors, then the answer is obvious. You and your friend are innocent. It must be the wife who killed him. No one else knew of the plot.
I'm not so sure of that. Frau Schneemann, the dead German's widow, was in the next room when Gilbert told us about his plan. She might have heard, though I could swear that she was asleep. I gave her a very strong sleeping draught.
From what you have told me of her husband's suicide, she might easily have had a motive for murdering this man.
Oh, come, gentlemen. Surely it's obvious who murdered Mr. Gilbert.
Who, Monsieur Holmes?
Well, certainly one of the two widows.
Since there seems to be some doubt in your minds, I suggest we return to the casino. I can promise you the answer to your question within a very few minutes. Well, Monsieur Chevrolet, now that we're all assembled in your office, I shall sit down quietly and let Inspector Ganivet conduct his examination.
No, Monsieur Holmes. No, you have handled the case so far. Please to continue it to the end.
Yes, Monsieur Holmes. I should appreciate it. On behalf of the casino.
Very well, gentlemen. It won't take me long. Frau Schneemann.
Ja, Herr Holmes.
What time did you leave your hotel tonight?
Well, I do not know what time it was.
Well, what made you leave it?
I could not sleep. I knew that they had taken poor Heinrich's body away, but I felt that I must walk back there. It was the last place I saw him alive.
How close did you come to Mr. Gilbert's body when you saw it lying there?
Oh, close enough to see who it was. Then I ran into the casino to tell his wife. I knew what had happened.
How did you know? You say you didn't come close to the body.
I could tell by every line of the body as it lay there. I could tell because I knew that poor Heinrich's death would not be avenged.
Thank you, Fassayman. That will be all. You may go.
But Monsieur Holmes, she has no alibi. Surely you should stop her.
Inspector Ganivet, if I'm to conduct this investigation, I must do it my own way.
Pardon, Monsieur Holmes. Please continue.
You may go, Fassayman. Mrs. Gilbert?
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Where were you prior to our meeting in the casino tonight, just before we discovered your husband's body?
After I left the hotel, I walked over here along the seafront.
Can anyone verify that statement?
I suppose not. I didn't meet anyone that I knew.
And what did you do when you arrived at the casino?
I played a little chemin de fer. A few months later, Monsieur Chevre came over to the table and asked if he might escort me over the club. 10 minutes after that, we walked into you and Dr. Watson.
That is quite true, Monsieur Holmes. I can swear to it.
Thank you, Mrs. Gilbert. I'm sorry to distress you with these questions. You may go.
I'll wait outside, Mr. Holmes. I must know what happened.
Wait for me there, madame. I shall join you in a few minutes and escort you home. Well, another suspect for the poor alibi, eh, Gallivet?
I must say, Monsieur Holmes, your methods puzzle me. It seems to me that both those women should be watched.
Yes, I agree with the inspector, Holmes.
Please don't worry, Inspector. I've asked two of your plainclothes men to keep an eye on the ladies. And now, Monsieur Chevrey, I'd like to ask you a few questions. Ask me any questions you wish, Monsieur Holmes. Thank you. You will agree that it is the custom of the casino to put money on the bodies of suicides after their death, to give the impression that gambling losses were not responsible for the tragedy.
Well, I do not think... Oh, come now, Chevrey. I know that is a fact as well as you do.
Exactly. Now, on those rather gruesome occasions, whose responsibility is it to secrete the money? Yours? Or do you entrust the matter to an underling?
I do it myself.
I see. Did you place the money on Herr Schneemann tonight?
Yes, monsieur, I did.
And did you also perform the same service on the body of Mr. Gilbert?
No. I knew nothing of that death until a German lady, Frau Schneemann, running into the casino. Excuse me interrupting, monsieur.
Of course, Inspector. What is it?
I think that you are wasting time. It is obvious that Madame Gilbert committed the crime. She knew of her husband's plot, she had no alibi, and she had the motive. For is not marriage itself the greatest of all motives for murder?
Oh, my dear Inspector. How very cynical.
Madame Gilbert did not kill her husband. I know it.
And what is your opinion, Watson?
Well, it's that German woman. She had no alibi either. And remember, she was half mad with grief.
Mr. Chevrey, you say that you know Mrs. Gilbert is not guilty. How do you know?
I was with her myself at the time the murder was committed.
Oh, indeed. How very interesting. And what time was the murder committed?
Well, it was...
Our investigations have never established what time the murder was committed, Monsieur Chevrey. I'm afraid you've walked into my trap. You've given yourself away.
Great Scott, Chevrey, it was you.
Chevrey, I've known you a good many years, and this is going to be a hard thing to do. I am going to arrest you.
Oh, no, you're not, Chevrey. Put down that revolver, sir.
Do not be frightened, Doctor. I am not going to shoot you.
Chevrey, why did you murder Roger Gilbert tonight?
Surely you know that too, Monsieur Holmes. Because I am in love with his wife. She's young, beautiful, and rich. It did not occur to me until I saw the young fool lying there tonight pretending to be dead. In my profession, it is natural that I should carry a revolver. What was simpler? Mr. Gilbert gave me the perfect opportunity. I could not resist it.
Put down that revolver, Chevrey.
Why are you all so frightened? Surely you know how I am going to use it this time.
I think so, monsieur. But it's a coward's way out.
What an unperceptive remark for such a perceptive man. No. No, all my life I have been a gambler. I gambled tonight for the highest stakes of all, and I lost. No. No, I am not afraid to pay for my losses. Au revoir, monsieur!
Extraordinary case, Holmes. I never suspected Chevrolet.
And I, old chap, suspected him from the beginning.
Well, I wasn't the only one who was stupid anyway. Inspector Ganivet thought it was the wife.
True. Very puzzling conclusion for a detective inspector to arrive at.
Well, it seemed logical enough to me at the time.
No, my dear Watson. Cold logic should have told you otherwise. Roger Gilbert had been losing heavily and had planned this hoax. He obviously had no money on him. Therefore, the money was planted in his pocket by Chevrolet.
After he shot him?
No, my dear fellow. Before.
Before?
The bullet hole through the banknotes provided that. Now, had the money been put there innocently, Gilbert would have, come back to life as soon as the person placing it there had left. He would not have remained lying on the ground for a murderer to find him.
Then Chevrolet must have bent over him as he lay there, placed the money in his breast pocket, and then fired.
Precisely, Watson.
Well, I must say you solved it very neatly. You've told Inspector Ganivet that you wanted no credit in the case.
Naturally, publicity would be unfavorable. If you remember, no one is supposed to know that we're in the South of France.
I'm certain that the inspector learned a few tips about detection tonight.
Possibly, old fellow. And I hope that you have learned a few things about gambling.
How do you mean, huh?
Well, you're backing the wrong color. A gambler is usually superstitious, and superstition... Well, I should have told you what color to follow tonight.
I still don't understand you, Holmes. I was playing number 10.
Exactly. Number 10 is black. You should have followed a red color tonight, old fellow. The color of red ink. Red ink. And blood.
Say, Doctor, that was a swell story. I didn't know you liked to play roulette.
Well,
you know, I figured out a system for roulette. It's like yours. Every time you lose, you double your money and keep doubling until you win.
Oh, it's a great system, Mr. Bartell. There's only one thing wrong with it.
What's that?
You lose, you go broke before you win. Look, take my advice. Don't gamble. You can't beat the laws of chance.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, A Study in Scarlet. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio. All rights reserved.